What's up, OUXers? In this episode, I'm going to overview the ORCA process, all 15 steps, and we're going to go over some of the stickiest questions that you are going to want to ask at each of those 15 steps. So I am really excited to deliver this episode to you. We're going to be, I'm hoping it's not going to end up too long, but we're going to go over it all. And not only am I going to go over the stickiest questions you're going to want to ask, I'm going to, of course, define each step. And I'm also going to talk about how each step in the process can stand alone, for the most part, stand alone. Because people see 15 steps of a process and they freak out. They think it's too much process, that it's going to take months to do, that it's too rigid, that it's waterfall. Oh my gosh, the worst condemnation ever that it's waterfall. and this is totally missing the point, okay? So these 15 steps, they're more like a bag of tricks and artifacts and activities that just work really, really well together, generally in this order, but rarely perfectly in this order, and rarely do they show up as all 15 steps. So we are time beings, and so I have to teach this in some sort of linear format, and this is the order that I teach the ORCA process in the OUX Masterclass. But as you progress as an OUXer, you're going to realize how flexible this process is, how you can mix and match and remix and blend the OUX principles and just mash them up with other diagrams, other philosophies that you love. So as I say, I say this all the freaking time, ORCA does not replace your current process. It supports and it makes whatever your current process is easier. So it's kind of like process fairy dust, just making everything you do more clear and collaborative and fun and color-coded and organized and less stressful. So I actually just want to read this. This is from Kevin Paz. He is a product designer and certified OUXer. And he says, there is something within this process that helps untangle the complexity of every project. Running through all the OUX steps takes all the guesswork out of how and what should be in a design. A lot of the stress and frustration of designing for something new has been eliminated by the time you get to the representation round. Even if I don't get the chance to go through all the steps within OUX, I feel there is something within this process that helps untangle the complexity of every project. Okay, and so I think that's just really well said, that even if you don't get the chance to go through all the steps of the process, which you rarely will, you're going to be able to look at a problem and say, ooh, we need a little bit of this, we need a little bit of that. Let's combine this thing with this other thing that we already do. And it just gives you kind of more, I mean, it sounds like such a cliche, but the metaphor really works. It's just like more tools in your tool belt and more like really high grade professional tools in your tool belt. And just being able to then have the experience to be able to say, which tool do I need when? And be able to use them spontaneously. So in the middle of a workshop and say, ooh, we need a little bit of this here. There is just so much beauty in that. So, you know, I talk about, again, like the flexibility. I talk about this all the time. I'll link an article that I wrote, oh my goodness, was it last year? Year before last? Called Prioritizing Prioritization. This talks about moving the prioritization round up and actually going through the discovery round and then going straight into prioritization and then going into requirements. So you can mix this up in so many different ways. And then it's really like, I just give you all these tools and then you take it into your context and decide how to use them the best. Okay. So this episode is going to be a great bird's eye view of the process. And yes, I'm going to give an overview, like what is the O, the R, the C, and the A, if you're new here, and what are the rounds. We're going to talk quickly about that. But I'm going to go through every step, and like I think I already mentioned, I'm going to be exploring basically three things for each step. So what is the step? How can it actually stand alone? What is a really sticky question that where is like one of the main tripping points of this point of the process? And yes, I am going to be teasing my advanced training that is coming up on March 1st and 2nd, because those are the sticky places that we're going to be going over in a lot of detail on March 1st and March 2nd of 2024. So this training is 6 hours. It's 6 hours of live content, 6 hour plus-ish. It's going to be 2 half days. So it's going to be on a Friday. It's a Friday and a Saturday, and we're going to have nice breaks. I really want to make sure that at the end of this training, you don't feel exhausted, that you feel energized at the end of it. So we're going to have a really nice pace. We're going to go through these 15 lessons across those 2.5 day sessions. So the name of the training is 15 Advanced Moves. We're going to go through one of the stickiest places in each point of this 15-step process. Okay, so a seat is only $350. So if you break it down across the 15 golden nuggets that I'm going to be sharing, that is $23, about $23 per golden nugget. And each one of these is going to be like, it's going to blow your mind. Every single one of them I know is going to help you be more nimble in this process and help you do all those things that we were just talking about. Being an advanced OUXer is a lot about getting that experience and that comfort with the tools so that you can do all this mixing and matching. So this training is for students of the OUX Masterclass, like the OUX Masterclass, that signature course with the 22 hours worth of content. So if you are enrolled in that masterclass and pretty much finished with the course, you should really consider getting a spot and, of course, getting the recording too. And if you're certified and you're looking for some next level shit, then please do not miss this, okay? If you cannot be in there in person, you will get all of the recordings. Go to OUX.com/advancedmoves to learn more. I have a whole outline of all those 15 golden nuggets, and you can enroll in that course. And if you are not listening to this in real time, if you are a future person past March 1st and 2nd, and you are also interested in that, still go to OUX.com/advancedmoves because we're probably going to have something there for you to be able to get that content. Okay, so we've got a ton to talk about. If you do the math, we've got a ton to talk about. 3 points for like all 15 steps. Actually, I'm lying. We're really going to focus on the first 12 steps, and then I'm going to kind of summarize the representation round. So I don't even want to do that math. Let's go ahead. Let's roll that intro sequence so we can go ahead and get into it. Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. Okay, so most of you here already know this, but if you are new to the podcast and to OUX, ORCA stands for Objects, Relationships, Calls to Action, and Attributes. And in this process, we go over those four pillars of the ORCA process four times, okay? So in the first round, we go through our O's, our R's, our C's, and our A's in discovery. And discovery is just about asking really great questions and really getting some good first round of understanding of what the O's, the R's, the C's, and the A's are all about. Then we go into requirements, okay? And like I said earlier, we can switch this up, but then we go into requirements where basically that is where we go through the O, the R, the C, and the A at really high fidelity, like high informational fidelity, and we capture requirements, we answer more questions, we figure out what our assumptions are. It is the toughest round of the ORCA process and potentially the most valuable and the most overlooked in the world of like really figuring out what our requirements are, okay? And then we go into prioritization. We prioritize our O's, our R's, our C's, and our A's from a business and a user perspective. It's a great way to build a roadmap. It is a great way to do user prioritization from the lens of ORCA. And then we go into the representation round where we bring everything together and we do sketching and prototyping and testing in the representation round. So that's when we actually get to screens. So we don't get to screens until the representation round. Before that, we are in sticky notes and spreadsheets. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into it. We're going to talk about the first four is going to be discovery. So that's going to be about just asking those great questions, figuring out the scope, and really defining what you are going to dig deeper in when you get into requirements. Okay, so object discovery. What is object discovery? It is asking that question, what are the objects in this domain, in the user's mental model, and what is the scope? Okay, so we're going to kind of do our noun foraging and narrow it down. And that is how this can stand alone. You can do just object discovery where you are doing your noun foraging. We have a whole episode on noun foraging. We've got episodes in the Orca series that go into each of these steps, okay? But this is just that overview. So doing your noun foraging and then narrowing it down, okay? And just figuring out what nouns come up over and over again, doing a little bit of synonym analysis, asking the questions that I love to ask, are these two things the same thing or are they different things, okay? If you just do that, you will start seeing value and you will start asking very, very good questions. So one of the sticky places that comes up a lot with object discovery is the user an object in the system? Or is the user the system? Okay. Is every end user actually their own instantiation of the system? For example, in my interval training app, I have a really simple interval training app. It is 100% my world. And this is what I call when I create like an, I am an instance of the system. I don't see other people in this, in my interval training app. I am what I call a God object. Okay. I have created an entire world within, my interval training app. And I, as a user, I don't see other users, but I do actually have a structure as a user because I have things like preferences. Okay. And I have things like settings and I have username and I have password. Okay. So there is a structure there. But whether I decide to model, if I was going to be working with this interval training app, whether the user is modeled, especially in like a very first workshop, is going to be a big question, okay? Whether you actually model the God object or not. So this is a kind of a sticky place that people run into on whether the user is an object or not, and also whether roles are objects. So do we actually have different objects? For example, let's take... let's do another example, like customer service representatives. Like, let's say it's an e-com solution. So we have the customer and then we have a customer service representative. Like, are those, or do we model both of those as objects or not? So these are these kind of like dicey questions. So whether the user is an object, it's like big, it depends question. We definitely get into that in the masterclass. And during this training, the advanced training, we're going to be digging deep into this one on whether the user is an object or not. We're going to be talking about God objects. It's going to be really interesting, but that is just definitely something that you want to watch out for. Okay. Off to a good start. Okay, cool. All right. So now we're in relationship discovery. Okay. So we're in the R of Orca. And this is where we basically ask the question, how do these objects connect with each other? What are the relationships between those objects? Okay. So this, I mean, you do need to know what your objects are to make this part of the process stand alone. But some often there's very clear, like you can figure out like the top 3 to 5 objects pretty easily that you just know what they are. So if you have those top 3 to 5 objects that are just, or even 2, you can make a nested object matrix with 2 objects. All right. So these can be small to begin with. And just for the objects that you just have really clear definition on, and you just know what they are. Like, you don't even need to do a bunch of noun foraging. You just know what they are. Go ahead and do that nested object matrix. And that is going to help so much as you start figuring out that cardinality. And I'll mention it again, and then I'll stop mentioning this. Like, all these tools, I'm not going to, like, tell you what a nested object matrix is. We have that in another podcast episode in the Orca series. We go into that. Actually, in the Orca series, we really focus on system modeling. But that information does lie out there in the world, but definitely come enroll in the OUX masterclass. We'll talk a whole lot about the nested object matrix there. Okay, basically what you're doing is you're putting the objects on the x-axis and the y-axis and figuring out cardinality in between. So you can do that by itself, and you're going to come up with really good questions just with those objects that you're really, really sure about. Now, one of the sticky pieces here that we get into is tree systems and junction objects. So in the masterclass, we don't talk about tree systems and junction objects until relationship requirements, but we make it really clear that like when you're actually playing this game, you want to get to those as soon as possible, especially like you want them integrated in your nested object matrix. So this is where the linearity of it comes in, where it's like, I wait to teach about it till later because junction objects and tree systems are pretty complicated. But once you know them, as you're out there in the wild doing this process, you really want to get those into your nested object matrix as quickly as possible. And this comes into level of specificity, okay? So our tree systems and our junction objects help us with levels of specificity. So for example, when I talk about level of specificity, it's the question of like, is the object, for example, is the object vehicle with type for car, truck, motorcycle, and boat? Or do we have car, truck, motorcycle, and boat as objects? All right, so in Spotify, song is an object, but what about when it's added to a playlist? Okay, because now it has attributes like who added it, what the ordinal number is in the playlist, perhaps even a date added. So suddenly that's more than just a song. All right, so do we have like song as an object and also song on playlist as an object so we can figure out the relationship between a song and a song in a playlist and the playlist and the song in the playlist, right? So we need to basically start seeing those junction objects, okay? So a junction object of a song and a playlist, song on playlist, to be able to figure out the structure of that thing, that entity within the nested object matrix. So it gets complicated here. So again, you can do a nested object matrix with those just like super clear-cut objects, but when we get to level of specificity with any kind of complexity, you want to be really good at seeing those tree systems and those junction objects and playing with level of specificity, figuring out how deep you need to actually go. Okay, so both of these hierarchy models serve this purpose of adding specificity. So I could have a tree system, to go back to the vehicle example, of vehicle type, which would have instances of car, truck, and motorcycle, vehicle model, which would have instances like Tesla Model 3, 2020 or something like that. And then the vehicle actual, Sophia's Tesla Model 3, 2020. Okay. So being able to parse those out and get those in the nested object matrix so you can start picking out those hierarchy patterns is really, really important and really, really sticky. Okay, so during that advanced training on March 1st and 2nd, we're going to be going through lots of examples of this just to get you feeling really, really comfortable with parsing out level of specificity with junction objects and tree systems. Okay, CTA discovery. Okay, so CTA discovery, call to action discovery. So at this point, we are defining our roles and we've got our objects. So this can stand alone as well. Again, if you really already have those really nice, clear objects, you don't even need to do a nested object matrix. You can go straight into the CTA matrix. Now, I love doing the nested object matrix first because it helps define the objects. To define it through the relationships, right? But if you are just really clear with what those things are, you can jump straight into a CTA matrix and you don't necessarily even need to define roles yet. The roles could even emerge through brainstorming calls to action on each of those objects. So again, you could jump straight into this. Again, love the process in the order that it's in, especially through discovery. But this, I mean, for I don't know your situation, it might be the best thing you could possibly do is to figure out your four top objects, maybe your two roles, and run a 1-hour CTA matrix workshop as the very first thing you do from a collaboration standpoint when it comes to the ORCA process. So a common mistake, the thing to watch out for, especially when you're defining roles, is system level roles versus object relative roles. Okay, so system level roles being that something like, let's go back to Spotify. Okay, so if I am making a CTA matrix for some new features around the playlist in Spotify, I might include user and then maybe even artist slash creator and an admin. Okay, that might be one matrix. Those are our system level roles. But then we also have object relative roles like playlist creator, playlist collaborator, and playlist subscriber or playlist member. I forget what they call them. Okay, so those are kind of two different levels of roles and playing between those. And you can, I mean, just like the quick advice here is put them in two separate matrices. But things can get complicated there when you start mixing those up. So that's just a really sticky thing when it comes to roles because object relative roles are all over the place. And I'll see a lot of people like confounding object relative roles with system level roles. So in that advanced training, we're going to be exploring object relative roles and just some new ways we can handle them and wrangle permissions as early as possible. Okay, attribute discovery. So this is where we start object mapping. And again, like, this can totally stand alone. And I know this can stand alone because this is how I practiced OAUX for like the first 3 or 4 years I was doing OAUX. I just made an object map. I just went straight into it. There was no CTA matrix. There was no nested object matrix. The nested objects just emerged naturally. So if you're really good at just identifying nested objects and you know like, oh, no, I'm not going to mistake that as metadata or core content, which happens all the time, okay, you can just go ahead and start object mapping, like by all means. Or you can start going ahead and saying like, let me just figure out all the attributes, the core content and the metadata, and just ignore the nested objects for right now. You can totally do that, all right? You're allowed. I give you permission, all right? So one of the things, a sticky piece that comes up with attributes is attribute rollups, okay? So this goes hand in hand with tree systems. I see this a lot. I see this missing or like kind of just like, a lot of the times these are just missing. And these are things like, for example, to go back to the vehicle example, if I have a customer rating on like a vehicle actual, like Sophia's Model 3 Tesla, and I rate it, do I want to see an average rating of that vehicle model? So like, let's say I'm a used car salesman or something. I want to see all the like, on average, what is the Tesla Model 3 2020? Okay, so that would be this roll-up or average. Okay, if I actually have a sales price on the vehicle actual, do I want to see total sales for the model? And do I want to see average sale for that model? Okay, so these are these roll-ups, which again, like tree systems and roll-ups and nested objects, like they all kind of work together. And this is something that is really important with so much of y'all's work with dashboards and visualizations, which we get into even more in the advanced training. But this is just like really important stuff that comes missing. I mean, even just like having a count of your nested objects. All right. So for example, if I have a vehicle model has zero to many vehicle actuals on this lot, I want to see like, okay, it has, here they are. Here's the nested object. And I want to see a roll-up count. Like there's 15 or something like that. Okay. So roll-ups, very, very important. We're going to be digging deep into roll-ups, seeing lots of examples on March 1st and 2nd. That's probably March 1st because we're still in discovery. And we're going to be looking back at those tree systems and we're going to start together kind of identifying potential roll-ups. Okay. So that'll be really, really fun. And looking at dashboards from an OAUX perspective, I've been wanting to do this for so long. I am so excited. Okay, so then we go into the requirements round. So that's the discovery round. Requirements is that high fidelity UX, just like ultra clarity. This is where our business analysis really comes in, especially if you don't work with a BA. This is where you might want to bring your BA in, your product owner. This is so much of a better way to document requirements. Okay, so in object requirements, this is where we build the object guide. And the object guide is just basically a really fancy glossary. So again, totally can stand alone. Actually, during Orca sprints, we go straight into the object guide on day one. So we jump from object discovery and consolidation, and then we're like, okay, here's our objects. We're going to make a glossary. All right, and we might even pull other pieces of the guide as well. So as soon as you have those objects, define them. Define them, and if you can, create some really solid instance examples, which is really important for storytelling and to make sure everybody's just kind of thinking about the same thing. So what we want to avoid here is creating something really heavy just in the name of completion. So the object guide needs to be really adaptable and the least effective dose of definition, right? Like we want to be thorough, but at the same time, like not every object is going to need every section in an object guide. And the templates that I provide for an object guide, you're not going to need every section. So like, for example, one of the sections that we have for like an optional section is an SEO strategy session. Okay. So if you have an object that is behind a login, you don't need to fill out SEO strategy on that. That's not going to make sense. You're just going to focus on any objects that SEO strategy is relevant, all right? That it's going to be showing up, that you want it showing up in search results, okay? So one, look at the, when you look at the object guide template and you think about all these sections that you can add, doesn't mean you have to add those. That's just because they're suggested. And if you aren't creating your own sections, then you're probably missing some opportunities because, again, every project is different. You might just want to have the definition, some instances, and then some other section that would make no sense on any other project except for your own, okay, or would only make sense within your organization. So you might have an object guide outline that's just for your organization. Okay, so during the training, we're going to be looking at remixes. We're going to be looking at how we can structure our object map so we can present it in different remixes, so present it to different audiences and only show certain pieces so that people actually use it and it gets read and it doesn't turn into just this 60-page document that collects dust and potentially is used for onboarding. People love an object guide for onboarding, but we really want to make it nimble and scalable. Okay, so we'll be getting into that. The advanced training. What's up, OUXers? There is something very important that I have neglected to do in the first 50 episodes of this podcast, and that is to implore you, dear listener, for a review. So here I am, asking ever so nicely for you to drop a rating and review of the OUX podcast into either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This can really help us spread the OUX love. So if you've gotten any value from OUX and the Orca process, which I'm assuming you have since you're here, I'd be so appreciative for a few minutes of your time. Okay, so how to do this? Don't actually go click on the rating metadata because that would be way too intuitive. On Apple Podcasts, go to the podcast detail page, scroll to the bottom, and you'll see some big stars down there that you can add stars. And then underneath that, there is another little link that says create a review. So that would be amazing. And on Spotify, you've got to do this on the mobile. On Spotify mobile, go to the three-dot menu on that detail page and hit rate. And actually on Spotify, even on an episode detail, you can leave a comment there too. If you scroll down on the episode detail, there'll be something that says something like, how did you like this episode? And feel free to put your thoughts there. Thank you so much and happy OUXing. Okay, so for relationship requirements. So relationship requirements, this is where we go through my Cat Saving Fire department. We go deep into the mechanics, how do things actually get connected? We go deep into cardinality. When we say has many, how many are we talking about? We talk about the sorts and filters of those nested objects within context of their host object. And we talk about dependencies. Do the nested objects have any dependency on their host object? Okay, so it's this whole framework to analyze every single nested object, which is a beautiful thing, okay? So it's really a great way to understand the relationships really deeply, okay? Can this stand alone? Well, yes. Yes, it can. You can apply my Cat Saving Fire department to just one sticky relationship that you are working on right now, okay? So maybe you have projects and you have tasks. A project has many tasks. A task can ladder up to many projects. So you can just look at that one thing, that one really sticky, whatever it happens to be, really sticky relationship and apply my Cat Saving Fire department and maybe even just pieces of it. Maybe it's just the sorts and filters that you want to be thinking about. Maybe you've been tasked to redesign a page and you see some nested objects on there and you say, ooh, nobody can sort and filter the list of nested objects here. Do we want some sorts and filters? How many is many? Do some instances of this host object have hundreds of instances of the nested object? I really want to think more about sorting and filtering. Or maybe like, what is the dependency here? Okay, so if the host instance gets deleted, how are we messaging people? Okay, so this is from a UX writing perspective. This could be a whole UX writing journey to go on of how we communicate dependencies within our system and what happens when hosts are deleted or archived or flagged or something like that. What happens to those nesties? Okay, there's a lot there. There's a lot to pick apart, and you might not be doing it in like, okay, now we're in relationship requirements and we're going to take all of these 60 relationships across this object map and go through the entire My Cat Saving Fire department. Once you understand My Cat Saving Fire department and then you're tasked with designing a few screens, designing a feature over here. You can have that in your head and you can quickly identify, I've got a list of nested objects here. How can I start thinking about what kind of questions can I ask? How can I improve the user experience by thinking about mechanics, cardinality, sorting, and filtering, and dependency? Okay, so in the advanced training, we're going to go over a really important nuance that I don't talk about in the masterclass at all, okay? And this nuance is when you're adding, let's go back to the project in the task example, okay? So let's say I have a task and I want to add it to a project, okay? I want to give it a parent. So I have a task, I want to add it to a project. When I open up that list of projects, how is that pick list of projects sorted and filtered? Does it only show me projects that I have access to, right? As an end user, do we have permissions on this pick list? Do I only see open projects? So I don't see closed projects or archived projects. So there's like a status filter that's by default already on there. And how are those projects sorted? Are they sorted alphabetically? Are they sorted like relative to the user based on how much what project I've last clicked on or something like that? There is so much to think about here that is. These little details, y'all, are so fun. They're so fun to pick apart if you have this framework to pick them apart and ask these questions and just realize like, oh my gosh, I am not the type of person that is going to design the most beautiful ergonomic dropdown, right? Like that is a UI designer that loves pixels, okay? That is not most OUXers, okay? The details that we like to get into, we love thinking big picture, but this is where we really like to play with details, okay? When somebody activates that dropdown, when they're trying, it's the project dropdown, okay? So I'm on a task, I want to add it to a project, all right? What is going on in that dropdown? What projects can I actually see there? There is so much to think about here, and we're going to be getting into that at the beginning of March. Okay, cool. Hope to see you there. All right. CTA requirements. Okay, so CTA requirements, this is where we basically expand out that CTA matrix. And for all of those CTAs, we explore the why and the when. Okay, so this really gives us everything we need to create really beautiful object-oriented user stories. So just look, it's like a really nice upgrade for your user stories. So this can totally stand alone too. Every CTA you look at, if you're looking at a button, if you're being asked to add a button, we sometimes call these like features or functionality, which is usually a CTA and the flow behind it on an object. So let's say you're being asked to add like a report button to a post so people can report posts, okay? You can be asking why. Why would somebody report a post? Okay, because it's offensive. All right, what makes offensive? And then when would they be doing it? So what is the context? Is it while they're reading the post? So we can think about the user context. Does something else have to happen before they report the post? Okay. So let me give another example. Like, let's use Eventbrite since I've been using Eventbrite for this live training. Let's say we're adding the ability to refund a ticket purchase, which you're never going to want to do for the 15 moves advanced training. But let's say we're going to go back in time. We're like old Eventbrite and they didn't have the refund function. So we're going to add the refund button. So I'm going to ask those why and when questions. And this is going to help me realize, do I have any assumptions? Like, what are some reasons that people would want to refund? And when can they do it? Okay, can they only refund? Can they refund at any time? Can you get a refund after the event has already passed? I actually don't know that. Can people request a refund? They just like didn't make it to the event. Did I, as the organizer, have settings on this, on the win? So there's actually like a whole lot of extra questions that might come up by me asking why and when. All right, and defining why and when and figuring out like, I'm really clear on the why and when also for different user types too. So, and if you have personas, you can do by personas as well. Okay, so the sticky thing here is, especially with that when, what happens when there's conditional logic in that when column? You might end up writing out an entire task flow, okay? So here is, this gets really, really interesting, all right? So you can write about it in the when column. And I've seen people write like entire paragraphs about just like designing it in words. Okay, this needs to happen before this for this action to be able to take place. All right, so there are conditions to that CTA, that being active or being available to a user. Here's where we can actually flip the object map inside out. Okay, so we can actually OUXify a task flow. All right, so my sticky bit for you is conditional logic in the when column. That can be sticky. You can just write it out. What we're going to be going over in the advanced training is turning the object map inside out on its head. All right, and we're going to be building OUXy task flows, which sounds like almost like sacrilegious or something. But no, we need task flows. I've never said we don't need task flows. It's just kind of, you want to do your object mapping first. So at this point, when you already have all of this good stuff, it is so cool to be able to create a task flow using the OUX color coding, using the OUX language and coding and like just all our conventions and everything. And then it creates this really nice companion to your object map. Okay, so we're going to be going over that. That's like, if you can tell, I'm like really excited about that one. Okay, attribute requirements, wrapping up the requirements round. Okay, attribute requirements is basically where we go and we ask more questions and we get a whole lot deeper into our attributes. And it basically end up giving our attributes backend attributes from a project management perspective and a requirements perspective. Like what are the, like if it's like I'll just give you a simple example of like a description or something like that. I might give min and max character counts. I might write a little bit of content strategy around this. I'm not going to go too much further into this because actually the next episode that I'm going to be recording is number 8 in the Orca series, and it's going to be all about attribute requirements. So I'm going to have a lot more goodies for you there. So specifically how this could stand alone is you can just take a really important or loaded attribute that's in the design and go deep with it. Ask these types of questions. Ask like what kind of requirements do we have around this? What kind of permissions do we have around this one attribute? Okay, so really you can zone in on a single attribute or like a little handful of attributes, whatever it is that you've been tasked to do, whatever attributes are showing up within your scope of work, you can say, are there really any important questions or gotchas or assumptions that I'm making when it comes to the requirements behind these attributes? So off the top of my head, a couple things that you can look for. And of course, we have like a whole framework around this in the OUX masterclass, but thinking about who can see that attribute, who can edit that attribute. So a little bit of permissions, but also what are potential values of that attribute? What is any content strategy around that attribute? How is the attribute calculated if it's calculated by the system? All sorts of fun stuff that we get into there. Now, one of the things that really trips people up in this step of the process is relative attributes. So relative attributes are attributes whose values change relative to the end user when we're looking at a particular instance. So for example, the Lucky Hair is an instance of a restaurant, a new restaurant opened up by my dear friend Jay Cornelius. Shout out to Lucky Hair. If you're ever in North Georgia, you should go. Okay, so Lucky Hair is an instance of a restaurant, but the attribute like percent match, maybe that it would start showing percent match based on like your Yelp reviews or something like that, might show as 95% for me and only 83% for you. Okay. So distance away is another one. So that's like 15 miles for me. It might be 3,450 miles for you. So that's going to be a relative attribute. All right. It can be really confusing for people. And also what to do when you have lots of relative attributes. So let's say, for example, with the restaurant, we also have like my star rating and my private notes and how many times I've been to the restaurant. Okay, that's all going to be relative to me. Okay, I'll have, you know, I've only been there once, but my friend Holly, I know, has been there twice. And maybe within this theoretical Yelp upgrade that I'm thinking of, you'll be able to see that. Okay, so what we'll be talking about at the end of the month here in the advanced training is we're going to be getting into how junction objects and relative attributes can work together. Okay, like really nice little tag team, and how you can actually, if you have a lot of relative attributes, you can create a new junction object and clean up your model quite a bit. Okay, so we'll be getting deeper into what a relative attribute is, other requirements around it, and how to get rid of them. through junction objects. So that's going to be super fun and nerdy. Okay, prioritization. All right. So this is from, we do prioritization from the business and the user perspective. Basically, we would prioritize our O's, our R's, our C's, and the A's. Makes a really nice roadmap. Really great way to chunk up complexity too. And this, once you go through prioritization and you eliminate quite a bit of your O's, your R's, your C's, your A's, what's left over is what you're really sure about. And that's what goes into sketching and prototyping and testing. You actually create the screens only on the prioritized stuff. Okay, now you can create screens on the wider scope as well to kind of see how it fits in, but you're going to really focus your efforts and you're going to be at much higher fidelity and definitely focus your testing on just what is going to be released next. Okay. So when we talk about prioritizing objects, all right, we're going to be doing that from a business perspective and from a user perspective. The one thing that you can do, you've got your objects, all right, you got to have some objects to do this. So it can't be in complete isolation, like basically all of these steps. You got to have your objects, right? Great if they're clearly defined, but you can force rank them or get other people to force rank them. So let's say you've got your top 10 objects and you want to run literally a 10-minute session in a meeting and you just have them on cards and you get people to force rank them, especially getting like 5 business owners or leaders or stakeholders and then seeing that they have a completely different order when you show everybody. This is really, it just starts a really good conversation and say, like, let's just get on the same page on what concepts within our system are the most important. Okay. So you could do that even from like a smaller scope of work. It doesn't have to be your entire system. It can be whatever you're tasked with. If you say, okay, with the thing that I've been tasked with, I'm seeing these 4 objects show up. Let's go ahead and prioritize them. All right. So one thing that, I don't talk about enough in the OUX Masterclass and all this that I just talked, we go into it very deep in the OUX Masterclass, but one piece that we're going to be going into in much more detail during the advanced training is asking the question, what objects make the business money? And really getting into it in deeper on monetization around objects and which objects are just going to be super important to get right from a business perspective. So in this advanced training, we're going to be going deep on this and how to make sure we're really integrating the business and making sure that our efforts are supporting the business. Okay, relationship prioritization. So this is where we take our nested objects, we force rank the nested objects within each object, and then we build a nav flow from that. And the nav flow is one of my favorite artifacts. It's where we start kind of looking at screens. But what I will say is it is great. I mean, it's great to have a nested object matrix and go ahead and prioritize that and then go into your nav flow. And you can also, like, you can skip all the C's, you can skip all the A's, you can go straight from a nested object matrix into a nav flow. You can also just go straight into a nav flow. I have done this before, okay? Because I can do a nested object matrix in my head, all right? So if you're getting there where you're like, oh yeah, I understand what all the nested objects are, they already have them kind of prioritized, I just need to start sketching something out. Like often my sketching will begin with a nav flow. And I will admit to you, sometimes I do go, if I ever go quote unquote straight into sketching, air quotes, big air quotes, straight into sketching, it's sketching a nav flow. It's a little napkin sketch. And that's what it looks like, is it looks like a nav flow. And I haven't done any of the other stuff. I kind of know what the objects are. I'm like, okay, these are my like 4 or 5 objects. And I will start actually connecting them on those detail pages in the nav flow. So it can definitely stand alone. Now, one of the things I see missing in a nav flow a lot is really incorporating my Cat Saving Fire Department into the nav flow. If we've done that thinking, if you jump straight into your nav flow, you haven't done it yet. But if you have gone through the process and you have done some work in my Cat Saving Fire Department in relationship requirements, we can incorporate that into the nav flow, and it is just makes your nav flow just pumps it up, especially those sorts and filters. So in the advanced training, we're going to be looking at some souped up examples of nav flows, variations of nav flows, and we're also probably, hopefully if we have time, also going to be looking at nav flows that incorporate landing pages as well. Okay, CTA prioritization. This is where we take our CTAs and we prioritize them. We prioritize them from a business perspective. When are we going to a release perspective, but also from a user perspective on kind of how far does the user have to reach to get to that CTA? So are the CTAs on the cards? Do they have to click into a detail page to get to that CTA? Is the CTA even further away? Down the page all the way at the bottom under some sort of progressive disclosure menu and the detail page. We prioritize it from a user perspective too. Okay. So in our advanced training, and this is also this is the sticky place that we're going to be talking about in that advanced training, is what about card only CTAs that are contextual? So this is the exception to what I call in the masterclass, that trickle down rule, which is basically the rule of thumb that if the CTA shows up on the card, it should definitely show up on the detail page too, right? You don't want to jump into the detail page, which should be more stuff, right? And then have to click back to the card to take action on it. We see that all the time, okay? So we don't want to break the trickle-down rule usually, but there might be some opportunities for contextual CTAs that are only going to be on the card. And this throws people off a lot, and this is what we're going to be getting into in that advanced training. Okay. Last one. Okay, we're going to be talking about attribute prioritization now. That is the end of Orca. That we've gone through Orca three times now. Attribute prioritization is exactly what it sounds like, prioritizing from a business and a user perspective. So does this thing from a user perspective, does it show up higher up the page or lower down the page? Does it show up bigger? Does it show up smaller? How important is that attribute for our users? And then from a business perspective, and also, when I say business perspective, I'm rolling in technology as well. So we're talking about a roadmap. So it could be very important to the business, but a really high level of effort. So this is also level of effort too. Just when are we releasing this, right? So we might have a really amazing attribute like video on every single vehicle model or something like that. Okay, that's a big effort. So it might be really, really high priority from a user perspective, but we're not going to get into it until phase three. So that's what we talk about when we talk about prioritizing our attributes. So one of the biggest questions I get in the sticky place here is, what about different prioritization for different roles, Sophia? And we're going to get into that. How do we prioritize? How do we do some intentional shape-shifting role by role? Okay. And how do we handle that? How do we actually handle that within Notion or Airtable or whatever tool we're using when we end up having different prioritization? So we're going to be talking about some general do's and don'ts, some kind of when we want to do that intentional shape-shifting and when we don't. Okay. So the last three steps in the process are that representation round that I mentioned, sketching, prototyping, and testing. And we're going to be covering those three topics in the representation round to get to our 15 nuggets. But because this is a podcast, I'm not going to really get into those because there needs so many visuals, right? We're kind of lumping it together into just representation overall. But those last three things that we are going to be talking about are, we're going to be talking about object permutations. So basically making matrices to show some intentional shape-shifting. We're going to be talking about modular cards. So creating these little modular building blocks and how we do that in sketching and prototyping. And we're going to be talking about data viz techniques, graphs and charts and dashboards and how we OUX those. Okay. So if you are already enrolled in the OUX masterclass and you've completed the training through a self-paced journey or the certification, you are so invited, okay, to this training on March 1st and 2nd. Check your email. You should have emails from me about this. The link to get your spot is in there. You can also find the invite in the forum in the OUXer home base space, okay? So our masterclass only space in the forum. You can go there and you can find the invite. And then for some reason you can't find the invite, just email us at hello@rewiredux and we'll make sure to send you that invite. If you are not yet enrolled in the masterclass, but you're still listening to this episode, hi, you're a super nerd and I fucking love you for it. Okay. Excuse my French. I know that I give a lot of juicy stuff away for free, but y'all, the real juice is in that course. Okay. So I mean, you can continue to nourish yourself on all these free samples that I give away, but the full meal, the full OAUX meal is there for you if you have the means to go ahead and roll. Go for it. I promise you, there's so much good stuff in there. Listening to the podcast and listening to the free material will really only get you so far. All right. So you do get what you pay for. A little tough love there. OAUX.com/masterclass. There is a whole community waiting for you. There is twice a month Q&A waiting for you. There is a job board waiting for you. There is so much good stuff that happens after you enroll in that. And we are just waiting for you. We're waiting for you there. So come join us, OAUX.com/masterclass. Again, let me know if you have any questions about it. Feel free to message me, hello@rewiredux.com. You can also message me on LinkedIn if you have any questions about the masterclass. I am definitely here to answer those questions and make sure it's a good fit for you. So, and if you are one of those advancees or you're looking to be more advanced and you are already enrolled in the OAUX Masterclass, I am so excited to see you on March 1st and 2nd. And meanwhile, just happy OAUXing, y'all. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OAUXing!